If you have my notes, you already know the topic. It's gospel-motivated hospitality. Again, we have been working through various aspects of what it means to be a missional church. It's reminding ourselves again, what is our task as Christians here? What Missio Dei values, what Missio Dei seeks to see accomplished by God's grace. Now, up on the screen, you have something that all of you who have been here at for any length of time should be familiar with. It's our missional triad. Again, just to remind you, this missional triad is the basic grid for everything that we do here as a church. So for those of you who are visiting or relatively new, it's important that you understand what you're looking at. On one side, you have the square. On the other side, you have the triangle. The square is how we talk about the public square, how we interact as a church with the world around us. And the idea is to be out among the people. It is that we don't retreat from the public, but rather we turn our eyes and our faces away from each other and outward toward the people who do not know Jesus Christ. And so there's various ways that we can approach this by just participation. We can do it by, it is restoration and conversation and also multiplication. On this side, the ultimate goal for us is the multiplication, which is the idea that we want to take what we're doing here locally and be able to multiply that in other locations if the Lord is pleased. On the other end is the triangle, and the triangle is the means by which we equip. The idea that what we do here on a Sunday is that we gather together in one name, we rejoice and praise our Lord through prayer and through song, but we are also here to learn. And the idea is to be, in a sense, recharged and reminded what is our calling as Christians, and then use what we are taught so that when we wake up on Monday, we are sent back into this world with, again, a renewed sense of our calling and our purposes. So there's a lot of reminding that goes on as we go about our business on a Sunday. But what it does is it talks about the way we equip. We do it through the pulpit. We do it through the community groups. And we do it through specific Bible studies. On Tuesday, I teach, and I'm available for questions on every Tuesday evening. And then on Thursday, every other week, I believe it is, that there is a group that goes through a theology book. So these are various ways that we are seeking to equip you. But in the middle is the circle of friendship, and that is what we will be focusing on today. This is the part where we are saying to you, we can be here as a church and we can go out into the public as a church and seek to be a blessing to the community. We do that in various ways. One of the major ways for us has been through CareNet and supporting that. But we also can do that just as individuals. But the most important thing that you are called to do when you go out into the public square is seek to make friends. And that is the idea of what the circle of friendship is all about. When we talk about being missional, it's a word that is bandied about by various people. And after a while, it starts to lose its meaning. But a missional person, a missional life is something that's truly a challenge for all of us. It's very easy to talk about. It's easy to think about. But it's much harder to do because it's inconvenient. I was speaking to somebody a couple of weeks ago, and she was just sharing some of the challenges related to being missional and opening the home up and talking about how it sets you up to be hurt. It's very messy. It can be very painful. And as a result, some people will talk about it, but they'll shy away from it because they tried it and it, quote unquote, didn't work. Somebody didn't come to Christ, or maybe they were hurt by it, or it was messy, and as a result, they're like, yeah, I just don't need this kind of drama in my life. And what I want to try to encourage you to think about is, yes, you do. In fact, you need to willfully go and seek out that drama in the sense of making friends with those who do not know Jesus Christ. Jesus said that as the Father sent him into the world, so he sends us. And this is the idea of being a missional person, that we are on mission. sent by Jesus Christ. And the only way we'll ever make sense of this is if we keep focused upon the gospel and the things that attach themselves to the gospel. If there's a difference between the gospel and the effects of the gospel, and you need to keep these in mind. I'll make reference all the way to the end about this. The gospel is that spear point of what God is doing in the world. It is what we bring to the people ultimately. It is the idea that we serve under and live and breathe under the watchful eye of a sovereign God, the one God, the only God, the true God, our Creator. And that God has made all things, and therefore He is Lord over all things. We also live in a broken world where sin and rebellion exists. And so all of us, whether you're a Christian here or not, all of you know that there's something broken here. It only takes a short bit of living for you to begin to realize that things just don't work out the way they ought to. Injustice is more frequent than justice. And that we are able to see rebellion even in our lives with one another. But most definitely there is a rebellion against God Himself. And it's there that the gospel comes into play, because God, in His rich mercy and love, sent His Son to do what we could never do. He sent His Son to bear our sin. He sent His Son to die the death that we were to die and to suffer the wrath that we were to suffer as our great and glorious substitute. And through that death and then the resurrection, in which He conquered the power of sin, which is death, we have hope. And the call is then to come and submit yourself to Jesus, to follow Jesus, hope in Jesus, and rest in the finished work of Jesus. Why? Because this is not all there is. This is not what we see and then we die and there's nothing more. The reality is that Christ will come again and He will make all things new. And those who are His will be with Him for all eternity. In other words, there's something grander on in the future, something for us to hope, where sin and death are banished and that we are made whole in every sense of the word. So that's the gospel. That's the spear point of what God is doing in the world, is He's bringing that out through you and I, through missions, through the various gospel ministries on the internet and in book form and such. Gospel effects are different. They are what occurs because the gospel is heard and because the gospel is believed and obeyed. Some of the ways that we see that, loving the church. One of the marks of coming to faith in Jesus Christ is a desire to be at church. It's a desire to be among your brothers and sisters. It's a love for the church because you love the Lord of the church, Jesus Christ. That's a natural effect. Another effect of the gospel is obeying Jesus's commands. He said, if you love me, which would be the same thing as following Him and believing in Him. He says, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. There are so many other ways you could talk about the effects of the gospel. You can talk about it in social justice, the care of the poor, the pursuit of peace, the love of truth and justice, or even racial reconciliation. All of those are good things. All of those are appropriately known as effects of the gospel, but they're not the gospel. You can do all of those things and still go to hell. You can do every one of those things faithfully. But if you have not yet first believed the gospel, there is still no hope for you. But if you do believe the gospel, there should also be a movement toward these things. And that's, again, the challenge of Missio Dei Fellowship, is where are you in the pursuit of these types of things? How is the gospel working itself out in your life? How is it seen in your life? It is one thing for you and I to say we believe the gospel, but it should be affecting us in a very tangible way when we look at the people around us. Well, one of those effects, whether you knew it or not, is that of hospitality. Hospitality is a lost art in our culture. We value our privacy. We do not sit on our front porches anymore. In fact, we don't even make homes with front porches anymore. It is one of those things where our lives are spent so busy outside doing the things that we have to do in our society, or at least what we think we have to do, that when we go home, we just want to shut the door and we want to shut everything out of that. We value our privacy. But as a Christian, we can't. Some people would say that they are hospitable, but they're not doing it also with the right motives or purposes. Sharing a common space doesn't mean that any relationship is occurring. You can go to a coffee shop, in other words, and you can all share a common space and you can listen in on conversations, but there isn't anything genuine taking place by the way of relationships. Many of you, in fact, could even think of times when you've gone to family gatherings and you just sat there and you were ignored and left out. Even though technically it was a family gathering, you were not in any way, shape, or form part of it. It happens the same way in a neighborhood, that you can live in a neighborhood and yet not partake of the neighborhood. And one of the things that we want to try to do here is help you begin to think about your neighbors, to actively begin to pray for those neighbors and to seek out their names and their needs and to develop a relationship with them. And so what I want to do today is show you why we as a people of God and we as a church called Missio Dei Fellowship ought to practice hospitality. I also want to talk about roadblocks to hospitality because there are many. And then I want to give you some suggestions on how to practice it. So with that, let's just look at hospitality and the Bible. It's not something that gets much attention anymore in our culture, but it is something that weaves itself throughout the Bible itself. In the Old Testament, hospitality is not something that's found in the way of the term, but the idea is very much present. And in fact, there are clear directives and commands given to Israel with regard to being hospitable to those who are strangers, those who are aliens. When you come to the New Testament, the idea of hospitality is not just given, but it's actually given the word. The term is given itself, and it means to essentially entertain strangers or to welcome outsiders. So right there, you already know what I'm going to say, right? If we are commanded to be hospitable, and the very word itself means the idea of entertaining outsiders and strangers, then you can already know right now if you are a hospitable person or not, and what perhaps needs to be considered so as to change and be obedient to those commands. Now, there's two senses of hospitality in the Bible. One is the welcoming those who we just don't know. It's just you don't know them and you go out of your way to get to know them. In Leviticus chapter 19, we see an example of this given to the nation of Israel. In chapter 19, verses 33 and 34, it says, when a stranger resides with you in your land, here's the command, you shall not do him wrong. The stranger who resides with you shall be to you. This is what he is saying to Israel. He says, for you, when you look at that alien, that stranger, this is a non-Israelite who has entered into their land. He says, when you look at them, they shall be to you as the native among you. You are to treat them like a fellow Israelite. And you shall love him as yourself. Now notice the reason. For you were aliens in the land of Egypt. I am Yahweh, your God. I am the Lord. But there he is saying, I am Yahweh, your God. And so as one who follows Yahweh, who has taken the name of Yahweh upon themselves, Israel was commanded to show to the stranger in the land, not just tolerance, but literally to welcome them and to treat them as if they were a fellow Israelite. The whole reason for it was, look, there was a time when you didn't have a land. There was a time when you lived in Egypt and you were the stranger. And he says, remember that. So that when the stranger comes into your world, that you welcome them as you would have wanted to have been welcomed in Egypt. You can take the same idea for us and remember that there was once a time that you did not know Christ, right? There was that time. Nobody had told you of the gospel. Nobody had told you of hope in Jesus Christ. And then there was a time when somebody did that. Some of you know exactly what it means to be so alone and where you're so starved for just some kind of relationship. And then by God's just mercy, people come into your life and befriend you and they open up their hearts and their lives and their homes to you. Well, we need to remember that there are many people who don't know what the love of Christ looks like. They don't know what a normal home looks like, a happy home. They don't know what friendly faces look like. They don't know how to interact with each other because nobody's ever modeled it to them. They've lived in perhaps a broken world their whole life. And this is your opportunity to treat them as if they are one of the family. All of this is built upon the idea that Yahweh is their God. And so the idea is, because I am Yahweh and you are my people, how you interact with the outsider is going to reflect who I am. And that is the reality, that God made himself to be the God of Israel. He welcomed Israel into his world rather than making them earn their way in. And in the same way, we are to do that toward the outsider. You can also look at Jeremiah chapter 22. Jeremiah 22. In verse 3. And if you're not real fast with finding these passages, it's certainly fine right now to just listen so that, because I'm going to be moving rather rapidly through some of these. In Jeremiah 22, verse 3, but I'll also read verses 4 and 5. Thus says Yahweh. Remember, for those of you that don't know this, when you notice the word Lord and it is all uppercase, it is actually the name of God, Yahweh. And I tend to use that a lot because I want you to understand and get used to hearing that name. That's his name, Yahweh. And he is identifying himself and separating himself out from all of the false gods around. And so here in verse 3 of chapter 22, he says, "For thus says Yahweh, do justice and righteousness and deliver the one who has been robbed from the power of his oppressor. And also do not mistreat or do violence to the stranger, the orphan or the widow, and do not shed innocent blood in this place." So these are some basic, again, reminders and commands for the people of Israel, because they follow, or at least they purport to follow, Yahweh, even though in Jeremiah they're under great condemnation and judgment by God. But notice the idea, we are not to mistreat or do violence to the stranger, take advantage to the ones who are weak and marginalized. In verse 4, he says, "For if you men will indeed perform this thing, then kings will enter the gates of this house, sitting in David's place on his throne, riding in chariots and on horses, and even the king himself and his servants and his people. But if you will not obey these words, I swear by myself, declares Yahweh, that this house will become a desolation." He says, you follow me and you do these things that are fitting of the people of God. He says, and I will bless you. You do not do them. You refuse to do them. He says, I will personally become your enemy. Jesus picks up the same thing in Matthew 25. Matthew 25, verse 35. Starting in verse 34, he says, "Then the king will say to those on his right, 'Come, you who are blessed of my father,'" the king is Jesus, "'you who are blessed of my father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Why? For I was hungry," in verse 35, "I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in, naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me.'" Now here's what's interesting. "Then the righteous will answer him, saying, 'Lord,'" you can almost hear the tone. "'Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or naked, or clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you?'" In other words, they're not all saying, "Yeah, that's true. We did, didn't we?" The people are actually confused. And here's what Jesus says. And the king will answer and say to them, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me. In other words, the idea is that as you're looking out into this world, especially among the brothers and sisters in Christ, and you see them in need, you see them lonely, you see them afflicted or hungry, it is the requirement and expectation of the Lord that you will reach out to them and welcome them in and care for them and meet those needs. And as you are doing that, who you are in fact serving is Jesus himself. This is such a simple idea, and yet it's something that we miss. And in our society, we think that we can say that we believe certain things and yet not act on them and still claim credit for them. But in the economy and world of God, that is not true. That's just simply being a person who deludes himself. So what we need to be is a people who are welcoming not only people we know, but people we don't know, but we also need to be a people who are welcoming those who we do know. Go over to 1 Peter chapter 4, 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 9. Very simple, very straightforward. It's a command. Be hospitable to one another. And then knowing people as Peter knows them, he adds one other aspect to it. He says, be hospitable to one another, what? Yeah, without the whining, without the moaning, without the complaining, without feeling like you're being intruded upon. Remember, the idea of one another here is a reflexive idea. It's that I am being hospitable to you and you are being hospitable to me. We're trading. We're sharing this. We're in some ways seeking to outdo. But the idea also is that as we are doing this, it is to be done with no complaining. Why? Why would there be complaining? Well, you can figure that out on your own. If you have ever been hospitable and complain, what was it that caused you to complain? Is it that your floors got dirty? Is it because your food got eaten? Is it because your things got broken? I mean, what is it? One of the things we had to go through as a church when we became Missio Dei and replanted as a new church was we had to challenge ourselves to rethink certain ways of doing things. Like it used to be you didn't have any kind of food or drink within this room, and you're certainly welcome to do so. We try to ask you to be neat, but most definitely coffee. But we also have our grounds, and we try to take good care of the grounds, even though right now things are all dug up and messy right now. And one of the things that happened at one point was that the kids were out playing and they were messing it up because they were having pine cone fights, which any self-respecting boy would do. I mean, right, boys? I mean, you find a pine cone and you find a boy, and pretty soon the pine cone and the boy meet and back and forth. And there was a discussion at one point because the frustration of, man, I you know, the guy who took care of it was frustrated, and rightly and understandably so, of all the work going into making it neat and then the kids out there. And yet I reminded him, I said, look, we don't keep our grounds neat so that they're neat. We make our grounds neat so that they're welcoming and so that people want to enjoy the grounds, which means they're going to get messed up again. It's the same thing within the bathrooms and the pews and everything else. We should not be upset because there's dirt. It's a sign of activity. It's a sign that people are alive. And when you open up your home, one of the things you're first that you're going to have to own and accept is that your house will get messy. Your car will get stained. Your food will be eaten. Things will be broken. It just is life. It is the way it is. And you should not care. You really should not care. Not in the sense of being afraid to be hospitable because of the cost. But rather in faith and obedience without complaint, you should obey what Peter tells you, and that is to be hospitable one to one another without any complaint. In other words, we need to learn to have a joyful, here's a key word, intentional heart of hospitality. That you should be happy when you come and see people in your home. You should be actively figuring out, how do I make my home that way? And in fact, if your home is not that way, then you need to stop for a moment and think, why? Why is my home not a place where people come? What must I do? I'll get to that in the end. One man calls this the inside care of outsiders. That's a really good phrase. Hospitality is the inside care of outsiders. It's treating somebody as family who is not family. And the home is the ideal place for you to do that. But it's not limited to that. If we apply Leviticus 19 to just ourselves, we can see it at the level of the church as well, that as a church, we welcome people who do not know Jesus into this place. We treat them with friendship. We show them kindness. We welcome them in every possible way. In other words, one of the most basic goals we have here at Missio is that when somebody is new here, they should be overwhelmed by your warmth. They should be overwhelmed by your friendliness. And so let me encourage you. I see some new faces. Have you welcomed them? Have you said hi to them? Have you sought to get to know their name at least? Have you also considered, you know what? Somebody came and visited last Sunday. I don't know if they're coming back, though we did have a pleasant talk. But I am going to actually make it a point to have extra food this Sunday so that if they do show up, I can walk up to them and say hello to them again and then say, would you like to have dinner with us at our house? Just the idea of being intentional, that idea of thinking ahead so that you can be that friendly face welcoming those who are from the outside. And I mean outside as a Christian or as a non-Christian, it just doesn't matter. One church calls this being outward facing, where we're not looking inward with our own clique and group of people, but we're always trying to look outward to those who might have need or might be marginalized in one way or another. Have you ever gone over to a house for one reason or another and just sit there? Well, everyone talks about things you have no knowledge of, where they talk about inside jokes that they never let you know about. They tell stories. They even plan events. I've had this where you're sitting there invited at their house. You're already feeling a little awkward because everything's going on around you. Nobody's explaining anything. And then they start actually planning events that you're not welcome. And you're like, why am I here? I mean, it's just weird. Have you ever experienced that? Have you ever had that sense of being an outsider, even though you're among people? By way of contrast, how about a time you showed up knowing no one, but were treated like a friend? Where they would actually explain key points in the conversation to bring you up to speed so that you could be welcomed into that conversation. Where they welcomed you into groups of people and made you feel like you were truly welcome. Look, our society has changed and hospitality is rapidly becoming a lost art form, but it cannot be our excuse. We, as a people of God, must contemplate how to make it our own art form, not because it's just a good idea, but because it is in fact commanded by our Lord. In fact, think about it this way. For the New Testament church, hospitality is actually a test of maturity as a Christian. So just think about it from that perspective, okay? Ask yourself, I was tempted, and I erased it, but I'm going to still tell you about my temptation, to have everyone who has been a Christian for over 10 years or more stand. I don't want you to. I was going to do this, though. I just wanted everyone who would say, yeah, I've known Christ, I've followed Christ, I have trusted in Christ now for 10 years. And I was just going to have you stand up so that you really understood that, yep, that's me, and you were owning that. And then I was going to have you sit down, and then I was just simply going to ask you this question. how many of you who have been Christians for 10 years, by that time you should be a very mature Christian. By then you should be modeling Christ in a multitude of ways as the gospel and sound doctrine is taking root into your life. I mean, 10 years of walking with the Lord, how much of your life is involved with hospitality for those who have for 10 years or more? How much of you can say your home is open? You're inviting actively people over. You're trying to open your home to people. It is a test of Christian maturity. In 1 Timothy 3, you can't even be an elder if you're not a man who is not known for hospitality. A basic test, basic requirement for an elder of a church is that their home is one that's open. Why? Because the elder is to function as an example for the flock. In chapter 5 of 1 Timothy, it talks about widows indeed. These are women of the church who are widows. They're over the age of 60, and they actually have an official capacity in the local church. And they're actually known as widows indeed. These are widows who have to meet certain qualifications, and in response, the church is expected to care for them and to meet their needs as well. So it's this symbiotic relationship where these older widows are caring for the needs of the church in some very practical ways, and in response, the church is caring for them. But they have to meet certain qualifications, and one of them is that their life had to have been marked by being hospitable. Meaning, for the woman, it is that she has created a mindset in her life when she was younger on how to open their home to strangers, how to care for people, how to be, in other words, a hospitable woman rather than just one who does her own thing. Go to Romans chapter 12 and you say, well, I'm not yet old. And I'm still married, and my husband seems to be healthy, so I think I'm okay. And I have no plans on being an elder, so I guess I'm still free. But Paul says in Romans chapter 12, verse 13, I'm going to start in verse 9 because this is just this litany of things that we are to be. In light of the fact that we are presenting our bodies as a living and holy sacrifice to the Lord. In fact, he is saying, because we are refusing to be conformed into the thought and values of this world, but rather we're being transformed in our mind, there are certain things then that should be modeled in our lives. And so in verse 9, and we'll go on down, he says, let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor, despise, hate what is evil, but cling to what is good. Notice these terms. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor. Not lagging behind in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, persevering in tribulation, devoted to prayer, and then our passage, contributing to the needs of the saints, practicing hospitality. That this is part of a countercultural mindset. This is the idea that we are to be pursuing. This practicing has a sense of intensity. We are to call to follow in haste, or to run after, or to pursue hospitality. When it says practicing, it's not some casual idea. It actually has an intensity attached to it of chasing after. So let me ask you again, beloved, how often are you chasing after the opportunity to be hospitable? You see, it's not something we can just ignore. Now, why? Why pursue it? Well, we saw, we'll see again, to be hospitable to others is to be hospitable to Jesus. I want you to burn that into your soul. And if you do, it will do amazing things in how you view your home and your private time and your free time. It will change your perception on why you have a home. In fact, hopefully, it will change your perception of where you choose to buy a home or what kind of home you choose to buy. I'm not holding myself up as some perfect example, but one of the reasons that we bought the home that we bought was the massive front room and the need that we knew that just as a pastor that our home was going to be open to many people, and having that large room would allow us to be able to entertain and have people over with great ease. Why do you buy the home that you buy? Why do you buy the home where it is? Are you seeking to get away from people? I mean, your dream is to get out into the county where nobody's bugging you. Why? What's the motive? That's the point that I'm trying to say to you. In Matthew 10, hear what is written in verses 5 through 15. This is the sending out of his 12 disciples. Jesus is doing this. So in verse 5, these 12 Jesus sent out after instructing them, saying, "Do not go in the way of the Gentiles. Do not enter any of the cities of the Samaritans, but rather go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." So he's sending his 12 specifically to Israelites right now. And he says, "And as you go, preach, saying, 'The kingdom of heaven is at hand.' Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons. Freely you have received, freely give." So he says, go out, do these things in my name, do these miracles, and call the people to realize that the kingdom of God is at hand. "Do not acquire gold." In other words, do this for free. "Do not acquire gold, silver, copper for your money belts, or a bag for your journey, or even two tunics, or sandals, or a staff, for the worker is worthy of his support. And into whatever city or village you enter, inquire who is worthy in it," meaning a believer, "and abide there until you go away." See, the assumption is find a believer, a follower of Jesus, and you should be welcome and stay there. "And as you enter the house, give it your greeting. And if the house is worthy, let your greeting of peace come upon it. But if it is not worthy, let your greeting of peace return to you. And whoever does not receive you or heed your words as you go out of that house or that city, shake off the dust of your feet. Truly I say to you," now look at the strength of this term, "truly I say to you, it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city." To the city that will not welcome the people of God, he says, on the day of judgment, Sodom and Gomorrah and the judgment God poured out on that city or those cities will look like a picnic. Now look over at verse 40. Jesus sums all of this up. He says, "He who receives you receives" who? "Me. And he who receives me receives him who sent me, the Father." Hospitality is not an option, beloved. Hospitality is not something we just kind of do if we feel like it, if it's convenient. It actually has and involves the idea of receiving Christ as you receive into your home people you do not know, and as you open your home to fellow Christians. We are to show hospitality to Christians simply because they're our family. I mean, I would hope that you would never turn your mother or father away from being with you, even if they weren't that good. Would you refuse your sister in a time of need? In Hebrews 13, if you want to turn there, Hebrews 13, it makes it clear for all of us. Again, these are commands. The writer of Hebrews says in verse 1, "Let the love of the brethren continue." What's that look like? "Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by some, this some have entertained angels without knowing it." He He goes on, remember the prisoners. This isn't talking about prison ministry. This is talking about the prisoners, those who have been put into prison because of their faith, as though in prison with them, and those who are ill-treated, since you yourselves also are in the body. He says, do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers. And he says, by doing so, you actually, some have entertained angels without knowing it. This is my wife's motivation. I've told you this in the past. Her whole goal in keeping people coming into her home is that she just wants to find out that she entertains some angels. My point that I always tell her is, but you'll never know it, because by this you have entertained angels without knowing it. But that doesn't matter. Our home is open and people will come in, and she's waiting for the day that she finds out that some were angels. And I smile at that, but it is the idea that God is sending out people, but he is actually sending even angelic visitors, and you have that opportunity to share in that. So he says, don't neglect it. And yes, I take that very literally, that in fact, God does that. And if that's not enough to show you the necessity of being hospitable, then consider 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 7 through 9 yet again. The end of all things is at hand. Therefore, be of sound judgment and sober spirit for the purpose of prayer. Above all, keep fervent in your love for one another, because love covers a multitude of sins, and be hospitable to one another without complaint. All of this is in light of the fact that the end is coming. Our love needs to be fervent toward each other, and we need to open our homes and be hospitable. And this is not something you'll ever graduate from, not according to 1 Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 9 and 10. Paul writes to this wonderful body of believers. He says, now, as to the love of the brethren, you have no need for anyone to write to you. Why? For you yourselves are taught by God to love one another. For indeed, you do practice it toward all the brethren who are in all Macedonia. But then he says, but we urge you, brethren, to excel still more. So you say, well, I think my home is open. I think we're doing a good job. All Paul would say is, you're right, you are. To those of you whose homes are open and you're intentional and you seek to do it, even when it's not convenient, Paul would say, you do. And we praise God for you. You're a model. And then he would say, do it some more. Just do it some more. Constantly learn to enlarge your heart. Enlarge it, enlarge it. It's like, the best I can describe it is it's like having children. I mean, remember that moment where you and your wife, your husband, it was just you guys. And then you hear the day that she's pregnant and the baby comes, and without even really realizing it, you've just kind of made room, haven't you? You're trying to get your head around it, especially the guy, because he doesn't have the baby inside him. And so he knows by faith there's a baby there. And he can see once she's really pregnant, the baby moved. But really, it's not there in your brain. And then there's reality. You're like, oh, my goodness. But without even knowing it, that little thing wiggles its way right into your life, right? And all of a sudden, you just become a family with three. And then she's pregnant again. And somewhere along the line, out comes this other one or two. And you've just made room. And you just keep opening your home. And you don't even think about it. It's family. And you just enlarge and stretch out all the more. And that's the idea that Paul is saying to you, is with regard to hospitality, there's not a point where you say, I think I do it enough. He would just say, enlarge yourself. Do it some more. Stretch out more. And you'll see that God will honor that. Beloved, an inhospitable church is a church that contradicts the gospel. It's that simple. We have been welcomed into the household of God. And so, too, we are to treat one another as genuine brothers and sisters. That's not just a term, but we're to see each other as brothers and sisters in Christ. Hospitality is something God values. Why? I want to give you four quick reasons. In Deuteronomy, one reason why it's valued by God, in chapter 10, verse 18, it reflects God himself. Chapter 18. He executes justice for the orphan and the widow and shows his love for the alien by giving him food and clothing. So show your love for the alien, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt. Again, it's that simple. This is something that God is. He is the God who shows mercy to those who are without home, who are the alien. And he says, therefore, you ought to do that. Even at a broader level, all of creation is God's, right? All of creation. And yet he created us and invites us to dwell in it. And he causes the sun to shine and the rain to fall and the food to grow. Mankind has not done anything to earn the world that we live in, and yet we've been given it. Everything we enjoy, everything we use to sustain ourselves is a gift from God. And God is just showing us hospitality as he does so. Again, the triune God was and is fully content with himself. It wasn't like he was lonely, and so he made the creation so that he could have friends. The Bible is clear that he needs nothing from us. Acts 17 says that bluntly. But rather, we need him. And yet, God joyfully opens his creation and his personhood to us so that we might share. Second, in Ephesians 2, it reflects the gospel of God. In Ephesians chapter 2, starting in verse 17, quoting the Old Testament, and he came and preached peace to you who were far away and peace to those who were near. For through him, we both have our access in one spirit to the Father. So then you are no longer strangers and aliens, but you are fellow citizens with the saints and are of God's household. So again, we were once far off. There was a point in our life where we did not know God. We did not belong to God. We were not his children. And yet God brought somebody into our life where we heard the gospel and we were preached to and told to believe, and we did believe. And in that we were brought into this household and we became the people of God. So it's an expression of the gospel. Even by the standards of the world, many of us had no chance to enter into a relationship with God. No chance at all. And yet he sought you. And he brought you to himself. In fact, it's the most radical of pursuits, for he sent his son into this world to seek us. I want you to think about that when you think about how it might be scary for you to pursue a relationship with people you don't know in your neighborhood. God sent his son into the world to seek and to save those who are lost. All adoption is, in fact, is just hospitality at a higher level, right? It's literally saying we will enlarge our homes to the level that we will bring an orphan in and make that person our child. And therefore, we have the responsibility, we have the privilege, and we have the motive to practice hospitality. Hospitality prepares people for the gospel. Hospitality promotes the gospel. And again, we have to get that idea in our heads. Our lives have got to coincide with the gospel truth. If you think that somehow you can live a private life hidden away where you avoid everybody and then somehow think you're going to be able to strike up a conversation and bring somebody to faith, you're likely crazy. Some of you will remember quite a while ago, I asked, you to stand if you had come to faith because somebody gave you a tract. I ask you to stand if you heard the gospel via a radio message. I ask you to stand. And I just went through all of these various ways that privately, all by yourself, you found the Bible and you were reading it and you believed and came to faith. And if you'll remember, those of you that were here at that time, we had like maybe five people standing by that time after I went through this whole list. And I said, stand if you came to Christ because somebody became your friend and shared the gospel through that relationship. And everyone stood. The reality is that's where you're going to come to faith. God has just done it that way. And you say, well, he's sovereign. He can do it however he wants. And I'm going to say, yeah, you're right. But the reality is somebody met you and embraced you and befriended you and overlooked maybe some of your foibles and weaknesses and annoyances and maybe overt rebellion and sin for the sake of the gospel. Paul labors over and over again in his letters to lay down the truths of the gospel, both what it is and how it affected each of us. And then he tells us how to live, because our lives are never separate from the gospel, ever. They're born out of the gospel in our lives. So in Colossians 3, Paul says that because we believe the gospel and we're saved, we're no longer to lie to one another. Abusive speech should be put away. Or in Ephesians 4, where because we have believed the gospel and we're saved, we're no longer to steal. But instead, he says, we are to actually work, not because we're to work. But he says, you're to work so that you can make money. You're like, amen, the American dream. But then he adds to that. He says, so that you can work, so that you can what? So that you can give to those who have need. In fact, you have not repented of stealing until you have gotten to the point in your heart before Christ that your labor at work is not to enrich yourself, but to go and meet the needs of those who have needs. And if you think you can do that without being hospitable, I don't know how. Peter also does this in a wonderful way in 1 Peter, where he says in chapter 5, an explanation of how we're to live out in this world. The whole of the chapter is in light of the gospel. In James chapter 2, 14 through 16, it's an illustration of that. He puts it upon the soul state of the one who is not hospitable or caring. He says that this is true and undefiled religion, that you care for the widow and the orphan in need. A third reason God loves and values hospitality is it blesses others. Now that's obvious. And you say, well, so what? Well, it's valuable because in Matthew 22, Jesus says that to love your neighbor is the second commandment. If you remember that passage, they said, what is the great commandment? And that is to love the Lord your God with all your mind, body, soul, and strength. And that's all he had to say. But Jesus doesn't leave it there. Even though they were asking, what's the great one? He then gives them the second as well, because they're inextricably tied. You cannot say, I love the Lord my God with all my mind, body, soul, and strength, and yet not love your neighbor. It's just, you can't do it. And so now again, you're compelled to be like the Israelites and say, well, then who's my neighbor? And the answer is whoever has a need, and you have the ability to meet it. To love God requires that there be a love of neighbor. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, Paul says this of himself. Having thus a fond affection for you, we were well pleased to impart to you not only the gospel of God, but also our own lives, because you had become very dear to us. Who is it that you're imparting and committing your lives to? Who are you allowing your heart to enlarge itself so that they can become dear to you, even though you might get trampled on? And then finally, God values hospitality because it creates community. God is Father, Son, and Spirit. And in that, you have the perfect community. In Genesis 2, though, God makes man in his own image. And part of that is that it's not good for man to be alone, so he creates woman. And in there, he's showing that within humanity, we are built for one another. We are to relate to one another. And that's part of the idea of reflecting that image of God. So create a community is not something you create. No program will ever make that happen. It's something that starts within your own heart in light of the fact that you are a image bearer of God. This is one of the common errors that can happen within our community groups, where you begin to approach it with passivity. Usually it doesn't start out that way. You're kind of excited to go. You want to. You're hoping to get to know people. But somewhere along the line, it's just something you do. And you kind of approach it as a duty or very passively. And somehow you begin to think this. You think that if you go to it, that something actually happened. How many of you... Just think about how many of you approach your community group that way, that when you go downstairs or to somebody's house and you gather together, you do it, and then you go home, and in your thinking, it's like, well, something happened, but what actually happened? All a community group gathering is a vehicle. It's a mechanism for you to actually have real community, have real fellowship or relationships. It's just a way for you to make it easier for you to pursue those relationships. There are times where people will say to me, well, I'm not so sure I like my community group. Well, we're not here to ask you to like your community group. We're asking you to open your heart to your community group. There's a big difference between those two. Really? The question you need to ask simply is, are these people Christians? Yes. Are you a Christian? Yes, they're your brothers and your sisters, and you are commanded to love them. So figure out how to do that and get over yourself. And about community group is all about you and whether you like this or that. No, it's a mechanism for you to then learn and to practice these things. Don't ever be fooled into thinking that just because there was good discussion that anything significant has happened. In fact, many people will hide from true hospitality and true relationships through a wall of words. At some point, you guys need to invade each other's, quote unquote, safe space and get to know each other. The church is a community, whether good, bad, or in between, but it is a community. And so how we function here on a Sunday or at a community group or at our homes all reflects the true community or fellowship that we love and believe in. In one way or another, we're reflecting it. So what your home looks like on a weekend or weeknight, whatever, is a reflection of what you truly value in the relationship of hospitality. This is one of the reasons, beloved, why Missio doesn't have a lot of programs. We don't do a lot of events. That's intentional. Because you can fool yourself into thinking you're having fellowship when all you really are is just busy. We're trying to give you time throughout a week to have people over, to go and visit the sick or to feed the poor. We did not free up this time to give you more time to watch Netflix. It's not for binge watching. It's so that you can open your home to others. So here's a challenge. Inadvertently, we create a closed system of community. In other words, it's us four and no more. We just have our friends. And we don't do that intentionally. Most of the time in the church, what happens is that you come in, you're welcomed in, you make relationships, and without knowing it, you just start to close in on yourself. And if you don't believe me, I could only invite you to stand up here and look at you rather than you look at me. And when I pray and I say you are dismissed, you should see your body language. And I'm not here to be mean. I'm just, this is what it looks like. I say, and you're all dismissed. And immediately you stand and you immediately face your friends right around you. and you start talking. And I will see people who are visitors, and they're standing there. They're literally 2 feet from you, but you have effectively closed them off because you just turned your back, not intending to, but not recognizing that there's other people there. And yeah, they're your friend, but you can text them anytime. You can do all kinds of things with them anytime. But by opening yourself up and looking around intentionally, seeing, are there people I don't know? And how then do I open myself up to say hi? Or to just enlarge your little circle of friendship? That's our job. And the need for us then is to repent. And that's not an immediate act. It's a daily choice for us to daily open our homes and our lives to others. We cannot fool ourselves into thinking we repented because next Sunday you invite somebody over to your house. So you're like, okay, good. Checked off hospitality. Nothing got broken and my favorite chips have not been devoured. So everything's okay. So why don't we do it? Well, first of all, our culture promotes an isolationist perspective. But there's also fear. You don't know what you're going to do. What do we do? You're afraid, well, maybe we'll eat and just stare at each other. Well, for some of you, maybe you're bad at conversation. I can only tell you this. Learn to talk better. Learn to carry a conversation. Actually read a book on it if you have to. Somehow you need to know how to begin to talk to people, and you got to practice. And there's only one way, and that is going to be practice. But you can do it by simply asking open-ended questions. In other words, a question that demands something more than a yes or no. You know you're doing it bad if the person is saying yes, no. Anytime they say that, your next question is why? Or give me examples, or how, or where. Something that requires them to enlarge. Do you like your job? Yes. What part? How's that work? And you get them to talk about themselves. And you just keep asking those types of questions. You're interviewing them, really. But what you're doing is you're getting to know them. And then you can also share in that if there's points of commonality. If not, use it as a time to learn another part of the world that you don't live in. But explore and ask those questions. And yes, there are people out there who you swear you're pulling teeth to get an answer from them. And I can't help you on that other than to say, you be faithful on your side. And if they just don't want to be friendly to you, there's not much you can do about it. But you be faithful on your end. There's also the fear of being judged about your home. This is both men and women, but usually it's the woman that's most concerned over this. It's not a fancy home. You've got kids, and so there's strange stains on the sofa. You know, the mystery. We were shocked when we moved from our house in California, and we moved our dining room table, and we looked at the carpet. We were like, our children are slobs. I mean, my goodness, what was living here? And you realize we're the mom and dad, so we're like promoting this. It was like, whoa. You know, it's called having 4 kids and stuff happens. You know, ask yourself this. Have you ever been invited over to a home where you were made to feel welcome? How much time did you spend judging that home? I'm going to guarantee you none. You don't care. You're just happy to have somebody to talk to, right? And they're being friendly, and they've welcomed you, especially if you've got 4 children come walking in. That was Kim and I. We would get invited to people's house, and in comes 4 little ones. And, you know, sometimes the older people were, like, eyeing their treasures on the thing. And they're like, oh, and we would just say, show us what you don't want the kids to break, and we'll take care of it. And then we would just say, don't touch, no. And we did things at home to teach our kids so that they weren't destructive little demons, but it was just nice for us to be invited over and to be able to relax. I hope that if you ever come to our home, the one thing that you will find is we just don't care. Just sit, relax. You don't have to take shoes off. You don't got to do anything. Just come on in. You say, well, my feet are muddy. If you, for your own sanity, got to take your shoes off, fine. But we know how to sweep, and we're not afraid of sweeping. We'll get you food. We'll make certain that you walk away fed. Well, if you fall asleep, we don't care. We just don't care. If you spill over something on the floor, we don't care. What we want is you to just come and be comfortable and be there. And beloved, may I ask you to think about that in your own lives. Another reason we don't do it is time. And that's just a lie because you're not too busy. It's just a choice. Look, you say, I don't have time. Then I'll say, and you never watch television, right? Ever? Cut out one of your favorite shows. Don't watch the Stanley Cup playoffs. Or invite somebody over to watch the Stanley Cup playoffs with you. Figure it out. But there's things you can cut to obey the commands of God. This is actually why we let out before 12 o'clock. Remember that at the beginning, guys? It's because we are a state that loves the football. And so we can say after 12, or we can acknowledge that unbelieving neighbors are wanting to watch that football game. So this way we can, one, invite them to come to church and they're not going to miss the game. But also we can go home and then invite the person over to our house and they can watch the game with us. Or we can go to their house. But it's the idea of figuring out how we can make ourselves available. We also think distance is a reason for not being hospitable. And yet we will drive long distances to go to work. We will drive even farther distances to go fish or hunt or shop or be amused. But somehow we can't commute to a relationship. Or it's because we're selfish. And that's usually the most common issue. We see relationships as something that we are to get out of. And we fail to understand it's not about you at all. It's about showing the love of Christ to others. So let me close all of this up. How do you start? Well, it's going to start by being intentional. It's not going to magically happen. What you need to do is get out a calendar and clear a day a month. Just one day a month and make no excuses about it. Two, start small and stay comfortable. If you're really nervous, and some of you, this terrifies you, I know that. Start with somebody in the church you don't know very well. Just ask them over for dessert. Or say, would you like to go get ice cream at Scoops? Or go down to the Buzz or Common Grounds for coffee? Another simple way is just invite another mother with children to come to a park with you. If you don't have a relationship with a neighbor, make it a point to talk to them when you see them. Bring over some barbecue that tastes good and leave it with them. Talk over the fence. Also, look for good models. If you're bad at keeping a home, so it's really a mess, and so people can't even be comfortable in your home because it's that bad, then go find somebody in the church that keeps a good home and learn. That's all you got to do. Talk to those who talk easily. Hang around them. Pay attention to the ones who are good at carrying conversations and figure out what they're doing. Join small groups. Get involved. Make your home available on a rotational basis. Make sure that you do something as a group outside the normal meeting time. You want to see a person who just thinks having people over is great. It would be Alex Aiedo. Whenever he has the pig roast at his house, I mean, he's just walking around with a silly grin on his face, filling wine glasses and saying hi. It's way outside my comfort range, but it's just something that household is a very hospitable home, and they open it up for the small groups. There's so many different ways that they have modeled that. So at the beginning, I spoke of the difference between the gospel and the effects of the gospel. Very important. You can be an amazingly hospitable person and yet miss the whole point. You're not being hospitable just for hospitality. You're doing it for the sake of the gospel. Hospitality is a means to share the gospel out of a relationship that you intentionally built. Don't confuse those things. But don't be so focused on the gospel that you end up distorting it by not being friends to the very people that you're seeking to bring the gospel to.